very hard is women don't have the capital. They don't have the economic clout. So to bring that kind of pressure to bear without having that, most women are trying so just to get the means to function. They have to go along with whatever the game plan is. I mean, I was criticized many times for saying, well, that's very nice, Joyce. That's a nice idea, but the bottom line counts.
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned that, because with a woman secretary of the Department of Commerce, we have announced a new program to develop a measurement for that next to bottom line activity, which is really what we call it a corporate performance measure. And we talk about, this is particularly aimed at large corporations where they feel that, many corporations feel that doing things that they do not see an immediate economic return on is not possible because of their responsibility to their stockholders. And what we're saying is that corporations have a responsibility to the society at large, and if we can make that contribution visible and give them credit for it, and even encourage their stockholders to ask them to perform in these ways, that we will engender more social performance, more consciousness of the need for that next to bottom line, so that we're developing in this next year. And I must say that the response to Secretary Kretz's announcement was quite extraordinary. We thought that it would hit on cold ears, but there has been a large response. And the idea is to have an index which corporations can use in their financial reports to their stockholders of the kinds of things that they do in terms, for example, of improving the quality of work life for their employees, of the expenditures that they invest for environmental controls, of their energy saving activities, and so forth. So we are going to try to create this index, and it's a measurement device. If the only measures available for good or bad are economic measures, then the human values are going to be left out. And it's the attempt to try, in effect, to quantify in some way the importance of the social human values, so that the balance sheet for corporations will take those into consideration in addition to profits. Yes. Okay. Well, that, in effect, is the third part of my speech. I've talked about what I do and what the Department of Commerce does. And now let me tell you what I'm really serious about. And that is the democratization of work, creating a climate in organizations within which people can grow and develop. I think that democracy, the ideal that and values upon which this nation was founded, were those of human growth and equality. To be human means to grow and to develop all of one's capacity. And therefore, if we are the stewards of democracy, that we must be, or it will fail. Then we must pursue the goals of democracy down that path and not stop short. My feeling is that because of history, because of our inherited bureaucratic models, our organizational models, which come out of, as Robert Townsend said in his delightful book, Up the Organization, a few years ago, our models were Caesar's legions and the Roman Catholic Church. And those models are fine for the purposes that they were designed for, to win wars, to develop empires, and to manage a religious organization where authority was clearly at the top. In each case, authority was the top, and it came down the bottom. So we have inherited this in organizations, and you can see in any government organization or even any corporation, the idea of the president or the secretary or whoever it is at the top, the all-knowing person, the God, if you will, the God figure. And the people at the bottom are not supposed to know anything and are supposed to take orders and, in effect, when they walk into the workplace, to hang up their rights as human beings in terms of really thinking through their thinking and growing. And that notion of hierarchy and authority, which we inherited from the very, very distant past, in the 19th century and the early 20th century, was exacerbated by an overlay of mechanistic theory. The Industrial Revolution and the development of machines were laid upon the notion of hierarchy and authority, and what we live in now are machine models with hierarchy and authority at the top. So that we live in organizations in a prison which prevents the development of human beings and the advancement of democratic principles. One of the extraordinary phenomena of our times has been the gradual decrease in participation of the American public in elections, in the national elections. Year by year, the rate of participation goes down a little bit more, and people wonder why. Well, I don't wonder why. I think that when we are taught in school, the schools too carry on this hierarchy and authority, but we are taught in school that our civic responsibility is to vote and to participate and to grow and develop. And then in our work lives, everything in the organizations that we work in, with few exceptions, that idea of democracy and participation and human growth is denied, is negated. Then how do we change that? Because if that is to persist, then the very organizations which are the economic force in the society, which create the wealth by which we live and our standard of living grows, those will die. They will wither and die. And what we are looking at now in the United States, I think, is really a big example of this. I met last Thursday. With the representatives from the Justice Department who are working on a crime message for the president in the early winter. And we pointed out to them that among the largest crimes, we're worrying about street crime and other kinds of crime, but one of the largest and costliest crimes in the United States is crimes against business, not by people who, not by the customers, but by the employees themselves. $30 billion last year. $30 billion. That is about half of the Defense Department's budget, right? Was lost to business by white-collar crime. And one has to ask why. Now, we have that problem in my administration. I worry I have an audit shop, and we have all these billions of dollars in contracts. And my job is to be sure that the taxpayer is not ripped off. And I have this terrible feeling, the more money we give out, the more auditors we have to hire to go around and check to see that the people who got the money didn't cheat with the taxpayers' money, so that we have this terrible pressure building for people looking over the shoulders to prevent fraud. And the question is, why the fraud? Why do not the employees of an organization feel responsible enough in their jobs not to steal from their employers? And my suspicion, my friends, is that it is because they feel that the organization is stealing from them. And what the organization is stealing from them is opportunity to grow, opportunity to participate, a voice in the decisions that affect their work lives, a voice in the organization of the work where they have ideas that could contribute to the effectiveness of that organization. And that is the real problem that I think we're facing, and the question of, and it's an organizational question, organizational administrative management question of how to change the very basic organizational system. My ideas have grown and my experience has grown. I began on this trek, and I'm sure that some of you have been on it as well. I can tell from your faces that you've suffered with it too. I was working in the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare way back in the 60s. And when I came in, it was new blood coming in with new legislation. It was very exciting. And I noticed, and I was quite aware that the people who came into the organization were really better than average. I mean, the intake processes of government were very good. And after about 5 years, I noticed that people were unhappy. Some of the very best had gone, had left. And what was happening was an ossification, a diminishing of spirit, a loss of energy. People were dying, in effect, within the organization. And so I said, why? What can you do to organizations to make them places in which people can grow and develop? I had the good fortune at that time to be working for John Gardner, who was secretary of the department then. So he helped me, since he was also interested in excellence and human energy. He helped me to pursue my studies in this area, and the reason that I have my job today is that he and many others have helped me. I looked at many organizational hypotheses and systems and experiments and so forth. I don't know whether we have time to talk about some of them. But the one that has persuaded me will have the greatest effect is the work that is being done through the Harvard University Project on Work, Character, and Technology in American Life. How about that for a bureaucratic title? The leader of this organization is Dr. Michael Maccabee, who is better known for his book, The Gamesman. The Gamesman really grew out of some interviews that he did on the side in the pursuit of this project. Maccabee comes at work. He and Harvey Brooks, who is the dean of the School of Engineering at Harvard, and who is concerned about the growth of technology and the impact of technology on work and character. Surely, he says, with the rapid change in technology, work and people's relationship to work must be changed, and yet our organizations are unchanged. So Maccabee had worked with the Harvard Science and Engineering School and with some social psychologists, Eric Trist and Eric Fromm,
to try to develop a hypothesis of effective organizations. What are the essential elements of effective organizations? If you can identify those, then one can begin to develop the administrative processes and procedures to build on them. He and we have tentatively agreed upon four. And these are our basic operational principles. And these are the principles that I'm trying to get established in the Department of Commerce. The first principle is security. People who work in organizations must feel secure. They must feel economically secure and socially secure. They have to feel that the place they are working in is a good place for them. And so that the kinds of things that are happening now in government with threat of downgrades and so forth, the very insecurity of working for government immediately drains all kinds of energy from an organization. So the Japanese knew this, and they grant, in effect, lifetime employment, guaranteed employment for life. Now, the idea of job security is antithetical to American notion of competition, but I don't think that granting a commitment to job security is necessarily in conflict with the American idea of competition and free enterprise, because there's another principle that holds, and that is the principle of equity. The second principle is equity. The person in the organization must feel that he or she is being treated equally, that is, being paid in relationship to his or her contribution to the organization, being rewarded and promoted fairly. At the same time, equity requires that person contributes fairly to the organization which provides his or her security. So you have, in effect, a contract. It's the old social contract between the individual and the organization. The individual must contribute, and the organization must provide security and must treat that individual fairly. Once you get the basic economic and social contract built, security and equity, then there's a third operational principle for today's people, for today's Americans, and that is the principle of individuation, of being treated like an individual, not like a cog in a machine, not having assumptions made about you that you're just like everybody else. Not everybody does indeed want to be a supervisor, although many do. Many people get different things out of work, and we make the assumption frequently that everybody works because they enjoy work. A lot of people work just for the economic rewards. A lot of people work because their work is themselves. They are what they do. But they are not all alike. Moreover, people need to grow at their own pace and be given opportunities to grow and develop. That is the essence of humanness. And that has to be present in a work organization. And the fourth and final principle of today's effective organizations is democracy or participation. People need to feel that they need to experience participation in decisions that affect their work lives. The reason why flexitime is such a popular notion, and the reason it has swept so widely through the country, is that it does provide, in a very limited way, but at least more than ever before, an opportunity for workers to decide, to make decisions about what time they come to work, and to be able to shape their work lives around their personal lives. Now, those four principles, security, equity, individuation, and democracy, if those were operational in organizations, just consider what the organization would be. We are trying, within the Department of Commerce, to apply those principles in areas where we can, in small areas at first, because our problem is that we live in an environment where we have personnel systems. Our personnel system, classification system, is built on a machine model. It comes straight out of the 19th century. We classify the jobs And we try to reclassify the job and split it into small engineered pieces, and we expect people to fit into those pieces, and it doesn't work. So we absolutely must change the classification system, and I am proposing that we move to a system of evaluation of people, in effect, by rank, and having the rank in the person. I think that 10 years from now that will be the way. I don't think there are many people in Washington speaking my language, but I have made this point to Chairman Campbell of the Civil Service Commission.